This is A View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Wednesday, the 1st of March, 2017. Pinch punch, first of the month. My name's Patrick Smith. 4 points for the Belfast Giants. 2 wins, 1 at home to Fife, 1 away to the Nottingham Panthers. We've got a jam-packed show that I promise will not be as long as last week's show. Then my wife will tell you the promises don't count much for me. David Rutherford, Neil Russell, Omar Pasha, Mark Hitchcock, TFAs, three-word weekends, you name it, we talk about it. We look across the league at the win of the Gardiner Conference for the Brayhead Clan, and we look at the Player of the Month competition. You want to get in touch with us? All the usual ways, Twitter at AVFTV, podcast at kingdomofthegiants.com is our email, etc., etc., etc. Hit the music. What a weekend! 5 goals from Salviano, 4 points for the Giants, 3 potential title contenders, and that's at a push. 2 wins for the Giants, and 1 farmer ploughs a lonely furrow back to the dressing room. Welcome to this week's A View from the Bridge. I'm joined by Mr. David McGimsey and Mr. Simon Kitchen. How are you, lads?
Hiya!
Hiya!
Oh dear, we're going to go through that again, just because we played the Panthers. Right! It's we've got a hell of a show ahead for you. We're going to be talking with David Rutherford. We'll hear from Omar Pasha, answering your fan agendas and looking at the Player of the Month. So let's start, as we normally do, with this weekend's games. We'll start off on Saturday. The Belfast Giants looking to avenge that 9-5 defeat at Kirkcaldy against the Fife Flyers when they hosted our Scottish friends for the last time this regular season. And they did so with aplomb. The Belfast Giants running out 7-2 winners. 2 goals for the Giants early on in the first period from Mike Forney and Steve Salviano before Tennell pegged one back to make it 2-1. Salviano got his second of the first period to make it 3-1 as that period came to an end. Going into the second period, only 1 goal in that period, and that came from Colin Finucci. He made it 3-2. The Giants still in the ascendancy. And that was to continue less than a minute into the third period. Salviano rounding off his hat-trick before Leduc scored 2, and then Salviano with his 4th of the game with a less than 2 minutes to go, and that made it 7-2 to the Belfast Giants. With regards to goalkeepers, Stephen Murphy in the Belfast Giants net made 16 saves from 18 shots, while at the other end, Shane Owen, well, he had a hell of a lot more to face. He faced 55 shots and made 48 saves. Your referee on the night was Jan Schmeichel. It certainly was a big reaction to the frustrations of the previous weekend, lads. Salviano, 4 goals in the game. It'll be 5. We'll talk about, obviously, the Panthers game in a few minutes. But, Davey, the Giants had to come out with a reaction, and that's the reaction they got from the weekend previous.
Yeah, and what we always talk about, you know, the cliches in hockey about coming out in the front feet and feeding off the energy of what was an enormous crowd. And, you know, credit to Brooks and those for getting 7,000 crammed in the arena. I suppose the full bowl being in for the MMA helped, and they filled it up, and certainly the crowd engaged the team early and vice versa, and the team got the crowd in the game, and it just self-propels then, obviously, the early goal. And we've been caught a number of times this season with teams jumping out of the penalty box and getting that extra man into the play, and It happened for us. Kiefer never in a million years should have been sitting that penalty, but he sat his 2 minutes and he's jumped out and into the play. Lovely, he jumped straight in. He was heading for the bench, but the puck comes to him and he just breaks in down the right wing. Lovely little saucer pass to Forns, who just settles the puck down, gets it on flat, puts it in the top corner. Lovely, lovely play. Bit of a screen from the D-man, but Forney obviously uses the D-man to do that and gets the Giants off to a really good start. And then, you know, the Steve Salviano show began then. He really showed, you know, I'm not saying Sav hasn't done it all season because he has played that role all season, but he really showed a lot of speed, which is what we were sold last summer, that he was going to come with speed. And on Saturday night, we sort of played the Fife Flyers at the game that they played us when we played in Kirkcaldy a number of weeks ago. We, you know, we we just were relentless at them with speed. Our transition, our control breakout, our breakout full stop was quick all night long. And we just got the goals up. Yeah, they pegged us back at times. I think it was 2-1. It was 3-2. I didn't ever feel really under major pressure from them. And we shot and shot and shot. I think it was, 60-something shots in the night? 55 saves. And, you know, the Belfast Giants have only, you know, given up about 18, 20 shots, something like that. So it was just a really powerful performance, all fed off that massive crowd that was in.
Says, why do you think it was so different in that sort of performance against the Five Flyers than the one we saw a couple of weeks ago in Kirkcaldy?
I can't answer it. I mean, that's one of the things that I was speaking to Derek Walzer about. And he just says that he can't put his finger on it. That game against Fife in Kirkcaldy, we were down 4-1 at the end of the first, up or tied it. I think it was 4-4 at the end of the second, and then took the lead just into the third. And then we just completely switched off. But this one, you know, obviously the SSE, you know, I agree with Davey. We didn't look in danger. And yeah, Fife come back at us and, you know, they've got some really talented players. And they were missing some really talented players as well. Ryan Dingle was out.
Yep.
The new guy, Cameron, was out. Justin Fox was sitting his one game automatic suspension. And then I think he was actually allowed back the next night because they put the appeal in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they have some really good players. They've got a great goaltender. He pulled off a couple of brilliant saves. But once we got the fourth goal, and as we, Steve Saviano, you know, literally, I thought he was brilliant. He genuinely could have had 6 or 7 goals. He was that good on Saturday night. There was one just before he got his hat trick. There was one that it was more or less identical to the hat trick goal, and just went past the post. He was just excellent. And again, he can't do it all on his own. His line mates were excellent as well.
Yep.
Deads was brilliant. Demaree, he just kept on finding them and getting in good position to get the wee bit of space to get the shot on goal as well. Moving Shane on from side to side, you know, obviously, you know, we can score against them, but it's one of those things where it was just difficult and they play a different game when they're on their own rink in Kirkcaldy. So overall, again, I didn't feel in any danger at all of not winning that game. Jonathan Boxall had joined us in comms, and
he was very good.
He was brilliant, really, really good, and he's hoping to be back this week on the ice. But if he's not, he says he's going to come back up and join us again. So for the Manchester game, but it was one of those games where, again, Paddy, I just didn't think that we were in any danger. We were going to win the game, and it all started with the attitude of the guys. They came out and, you know, got off to a good start, as Davey said. Forney got the goal and just kept on putting pressure on Shane Owen. I think it was 22 shots in the second period alone.
Yeah.
And in the third period again, I think it was about 19 or 20. So, but he faced a lot of rubber. Stephen Murphy pulled off a couple of brilliant saves. Again, just as I think it was 3-3, and he pulled off a real cracker. And from there on in, it was, you know, I think we took our foot off the pedal again on late in the third. And obviously just to conserve a bit of energy, and the fourth line got a bit more ice time as well. But I thought, again, overall, totally deserved the win.
David, go ahead.
So just right back to, you know, says his first point there about missing Fox and Dingle. That's probably the key, you know, where we have probably a little bit more depth. I think that ended them up at probably 16 skaters or something like that. And that's something to look towards maybe next season and a bigger discussion point. But, you know, we have a depth of when somebody drops out, the like of Foster's dropped out. We carry a spare import. Jeff Mason was sitting on the sidelines. You know, Foster's out on the bench there. We're able to bring in Leduc, for example. You know, we're able just to have that bit more depth. And that comes from the power of having maybe a slightly bigger budget and having those bodies available. Okay, yeah, we miss Johnny Boxall as well. Obviously, British guys are harder to replace on a night-by-night basis. But, you know, just that toll for them, you take there probably their two best players out of the team when you're excluding their goaltender. You know, take them out of their team, they're thin and they're having to run two lines really, whereas we are able to run 3.5/4 lines at the weekend. And just it was just a relentless thing. You say we've outshot them 2-1, almost 3-1 actually. Maybe it is 3-1, 18 times 3 is 54, treble 18, you know. So we're outshooting them 3-1. You've got to expect to come away with a comfortable victory, and 7-2 the scoreline could have been, I think, as Simon said, could have been more.
We touched on the player last week briefly because he just signed, and obviously the frustrations of the Cardiff games we didn't get in depth. But, Davey, what was your take on Jerome Leduc? That's 4 goals in 3 games, as that was 4 goals in 4 games overall.
It's a funny one, and we discussed, was he the type of D-man that we perhaps thought we needed? But, you know, sometimes offense is the best form of defense. And, you know, he's also proved very adept in the top of the circle there, top of the right or top of the left circle on the power play there. That's obviously something they've been working in, getting him to the top of the circle, and Vandermeer or whoever it would be. It's usually JV on that line, feeding him for that one-timer that he's shown. And he's shown he's happy to get into the blue paint as well. That goal he scored from, I think was it Higgy's drove the net and Riley's gone crashing in and flipped it over to him. And he's shown, you know, the footwork as well. Those guys play all that two-touch beforehand, and all those little things help you out. And he's able to get it, skate the stick and get it in the back of the net. But 2 great goals again, 4 goals, 3 games. And he's already, you know, finding a legendary status amongst the fans here. But, you know, it's going to come up. We weren't even having to play that ultra-defensive game in Nottingham. I want to see us whenever, what he brings to the party, whenever we're in a tight defensive-style game. We haven't really got to see his... He's got good size, he's got good feet, and he clears the zone well. So all those things bear well, but he is that offensive D-man that we thought he was going to be. He's obviously came up with points to prove that.
Simon?
Yeah, I do... you know, he's a great skater. That's one thing that sort of, he's been jumping up into the play an awful lot, maybe a little too much. But again, first and foremost, he's a defenseman, which he needs to make sure he's covering his own side and getting back when he needs to get back, and his skating ability lets him do that, or has let him do it so far. But, I think overall it's been a really good pickup. You know, Mace missed out again on Saturday night, and I think Lee Mace has been excellent when he's been in the lineup, and I do think he's obviously missing out. But he knew at the start of the season that he was going to be the extra import. So with him being out and Foster being out, which I do think we are really missing, Alex Foster he's in the face-off circle. He's one of the best in the league, and we've been struggling in the circle. I'm not too sure what Davey's stats are for the last couple of games, but I definitely think we're missing Foster, and he was speaking to him on Saturday night, and he's hoping that there's a slight possibility he might be back before the end of the season. So the news he got from his MRI scan was positive, and he's hoping when he had the keyhole surgery, he's hoping he's going to be back in the lineup, before the start of the playoffs.
Fantastic. We'll wish him well. Hopefully he does. It was, a comprehensive victory for the Belfast Giants at home, 7-2 over the Fife Flyers. If you want to see highlights of that game, you can get them on Belfast Giants TV. Right, so we move to our last game of the season against the Nottingham Panthers in the NIC. Not the last game overall. Of course, they still have a visit to make to the SSE, but our last trip over to Nottingham to take them on in the regular season. The Giants have done pretty well of late, and that continued with a 4-3 victory over the Panthers. However, it was David Clark who opened the scoring for the home side with a trademark David Clark goal. I don't think Stephen Murphy even got a sniff of it as it hit the back of the net. Blair Riley drove up the other side and he put it past Mika Vigman to make it 1-1 and close out the first period. In the second period, Matt Toe and James Demarai gave the Giants a 3-1 lead before Matt Carter made it 3-2. After that goal was scored, there was a bit of an incident. We'll come back to that in a second. Steve Salviano rounded off the second period with his 5th goal of the weekend, and it made it 4-2 to the Belfast Giants before Chris Lawrence kept the Panthers in it 10 minutes into the third period to make it 4-3. The Panthers pulled the netminder and almost got the equaliser, but didn't. And the Giants leave the NIC this season with 7 points out of 8. Says the previous games between these two sides have been pretty turgid, to be fair. You know, partly down to the tactics of the Giants and trying to grind out the wins. This one wasn't. This one was pretty good.
Yeah, I just a disappointment. There's no bloody webcast for it. I had to watch it on Twitter. You know, that's painstaking enough, especially when, you know, it depends on whose Twitter you follow. You can follow Panthers banter or Teal Empire, and sometimes you just keep on hitting refresh and your battery runs dead as well, so it's really annoying. But anyway, you know, picking up another 2 points at the NIC this season, where we've been absolutely brilliant. I don't think you can fault any game that the Giants have been in there and this season and put in another performance. You know, you touched on Clark there, Paddy. Clarkie's been outstanding, one of the best Brits in the league over the last 10 years, if not the best. I know we've got a couple of crackers, but, you know, certainly it's a player I'd love to have seen from the British side of things and the Teal, and really, really admire him. He's super, super player, and he scored another absolute cracker on Saturday to get the Panthers off to a great start.
He seems to do that against us. He seems to have that same sort of strike, that same sort of positioning, that same sort of goal. It seems to, I was listening to the Cats Whiskers podcast, and they were saying about how it was a trademark David Clark goal, and I couldn't agree more. That's exactly the sort of goals you see time and time again from him.
It just gets into space. He finds pockets of space that you know, the guys, maybe you're giving them a wee bit too much space, and you should get a bit tighter on him. So it's he's just quality. It's like footballers as well. You know, there's certain footballers out there who, like Paul Scholes from Manchester United, you know, he always found that little bit of extra space and created something. And that's David Clark, you know, for the Panthers. But that's enough about the Nottingham Panthers. you know, from the way we played a game on Saturday night, and I'm watching the highlights with some really good movement and obviously, you know, getting a couple of different goals and different goal scorers. Matty Toe picked up another goal. He's been put up onto the third line there with the injuries that we've picked up, and he's been brilliant. He's been absolutely brilliant. He's getting a lot of extra ice time. He's putting it. He's just showing that Derek Walzer, he actually deserves to be there as well. So overall, I thought we were excellent. You know, it's there's obviously a couple of incidents which you know, the first one with Jim Van Der Meer, brilliant hit, brilliant open ice hit, and Brian McGrattan stepping in, and you know, I've read different people's views on it. I just think he's trying to get his team sparked. We were 2-1 up at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, if they'd have been 2-1 up, would he have stepped in? Maybe went and had a word. Probably wouldn't have done what he did and took 17 minutes of penalties, which we did score a power play goal on that, didn't we?
Yes.
I think we did. Yeah. So it's
11-10. Yeah, we did. Jim's down.
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, you get an instigator penalty and lose a goal on it, you're sitting in that penalty box feeling sick. So a great performance. Obviously, we'll touch on the other incident in a few minutes. But overall, absolutely deserved the win. And I thought the referee was outstanding, by the way. For what we've seen, I thought the referee was absolutely outstanding.
Tom Perring was your referee. The goalie stats I forgot to give you. Stephen Murphy in goals for the Belfast Giants made 21 saves from 24 shots. And Mika Vikman in the other net made 21 saves from 25 shots.
Sorry, just my last bit in that game. What a save from Stephen Murphy at the very...
Sickly be something to talk about, would you?
Well, hold on. Well, that's what I'll do. Davey, I'll move over to yourself. The Giants took the control of that game in the second period. Now, the Panthers obviously had to try to fight their way back. And that they did. Well, like I say, the incident we'll brush on in a second, but they sort of shot themselves in the foot with that. But, Stephen Murphy had an outstanding game all the way through.
He makes two saves in the game that he probably really has no right to make, and they're very typical of Stephen. Okay, they're desperation saves because he's down on the ice and he's scrambling, and sometimes you come up with those, you know, there's an element of luck, but you've got to throw your the one that's behind his back and he throws his hand over. He knows what he's doing, you know, he's covering some of his net with that big glove, and he comes up with an unbelievable save. And the one with seconds left on the clock that he forces the puck back out in the play, and I think it's Spang maybe, or Sertich that goes to. Can't keep it down with a bullet shot from the slot, you know, to tie the game up. But Stephen Murphy earns the victory there. Quite surprised considering the key saves and the times of the game he made them that he didn't come away with the Man of the Match award. But all credit to Martinelli, who had another great weekend, and obviously player of the month candidate. And you know, we profited again. I think it was their Blair Riley goal, very similar. I think that's the third time this season we have scored that low down right hand D, long stretch pass to the left wing, breaking in around the defender's shoulder and getting a high backhand shot over, who did you say was net from there?
Vikman.
Bigman again. I think all three times it's Blair Riley.
It's been the same move. It's been the same shot. And it's been Blair Riley more or less every time.
Yeah. So you know that's something that you don't get three coincidences. You know, you can say that happens a second time. Lightning doesn't strike twice. It certainly doesn't strike three times. That's a set play that we've obviously worked on, that long stretch pass and getting in and getting the shot high on Bigman from close in. And so credit to the guys for doing that. But another tight game, we kept the shot count down a well away from home there. We've only given up 24 shots to the Panthers, which I'm sure they'll be looking to try and get up more in around the 30. Special teams were good, 2 for 2 on the power play, and we only conceded 1 on the penalty kill. You know, says it said it all about David Clarke there. The quote coach, you know, have waxed lyrical in the past about him. You can go back through the old podcast where I said the same as says, you know, if you had to like sell your soul and take a Panther, it would always have been David Clarke for me. You know, Murph's unlucky there. Murph gets a decent one. He pushes it up in the roof of the net, you know, but it's a well taken shot. And Simon talks about the good players find the space. You know, he says about Scholes. I remember watching Brian Robson when he was playing for Middlesbrough at the old Ayrton Park against Derby in the later stages of his career, and how he could find the ball came to him. And it always seemed that he just had a zone around him where there was nobody else, and he always had time to pick a pass or time to take a shot. And that's David Clarke does it. That goal, he just peels away from the top of the left circle there, and the puck finds him because he's in a good position and he's able to rip a shot away. And you know, I don't have the stats, sadly, being a stat guy. You know, I'd love to know how many goals David Clarke scored against us. It always seems to be David Clarke, yeah. And he always seems to open the scoring. You know, he always seems to get that go ahead goal when they need something. How they have missed him this season through injury. How they have missed him. But, you know, we've came away there, obviously, again, 7 points out of 8 out of the NIC is a great return over the course of a season in a place that's not a happy hunting ground for many teams.
Statistically, how good is that for us? Is that our best season at the NIC?
It's hard to levy, Paddy, because we obviously have had seasons where we've played maybe 9 or 10 games in the NIC. Obviously, this season we've played 4 and we've came away with 3 wins and an overtime loss. Their Tony Hahn's season, we played 3 times with 2 wins and a tie. So technically, that pro rata would be our best season. We never lost in the NIC that season. But, you know, points-wise, this would be one of our best seasons, as in, you know, we didn't lose in regulation in it all season long, and that's something to be said for a really, really strong team.
Couple of the flashpoints, Sizz has already mentioned one. I'll give you your take on it, Davey. The first one I want to talk about is that hit from Jim Vandermeer. Absolute stunner of a hit that led to Brian McGrattan coming in, and as Sizz says, he's trying to spark his team into some life.
Yeah, I know I had a little tongue-in-cheek go, it was a bit of a fishing rod exercise there, you know, Yeah, well, it did, yeah, but, you know, Vandermeer puts an absolute beaut hit on Sarkanis. And if you watch the NHL week in, week out, good hits draw scrums, and it's no different in the EIHL. And it's something that does get on my nerves because that there's nothing better than, do you remember back in the day, do you remember when everything was better back in the day? when Bozy was crushing people with open ice hits. That's what you want to see. You want to see fights, you want to see open ice hits, you want to see goals. That's what you want to see when you come to hockey. But not every open ice hits. And he's not defending a teammate, and he's not, you know, he's not making Jim Vandermeer pay for a dirty play. That's a clean hockey play. You know, go and lay another hit on Jim Vandermeer. Take your revenge in that. You know, to me, dropping the gloves there isn't, I understand it's part of the game, I understand it's going to happen, but just for me, that annoys me. But you know,
do you know when the likes of Stevens at the Devils? Let's clarify that. Scott Stevens at the New Jersey Devils, not Rod Stevens at the Cardiff Devils or something like that. No, Scott Stevens at New Jersey, he would put on absolute stunner mid ice hits. The guy would get up, shake it off, and you'd play on. Why is that?
Not everybody, Paddy. Well, I've seen him never go back up again.
Some of them never got back up again, but very rarely you'd see anybody go after Stevens to try to gain retribution for the hit. Has the game changed that much?
Yeah, I think it has. And obviously, you know, there's incidents happening in different games, and you know, the tough guy's role to a certain extent, especially in the higher leagues, the NHL, has changed over the years as well, and they don't get as much ice time now, and they're actually, in fairness, there's not as many of them anymore, and sometimes players take liberties over that, and And I absolutely 100% agree with Davey. You know, an open ice hit, which is becoming very, very, very few throughout all different leagues. If you see an open ice hit like that one from Jim Vandermeer the other night, it was brilliant. And I'm sure if you ask, if we ever got a chance to interview, you know, likes of Bram McGrattan from the Nottingham Panthers, which is very unlikely. You know, I'm sure he'd probably say the same thing, like it was a good hit, but I was just literally trying to either protect the teammate or basically trying to spark my team.
I'm with you, Shiz. The only rationale behind it is to try and spark his team because they're 2-1 down, because he's taken, as you say, 17 minutes in penalties. We've gone on and scored in power play. The role of the enforcer, and I'd love to get Victoria Silverwood on again, could talk to her all day, is about protecting your teammates and stopping cheap hits and cheap plays, of which Van der Meer's wasn't either. The guy's skating through centre ice with the puck. Van der Meer just lowers a boom on him. No hit, no foul, no headshot, no anything. Separates his man from the puck. The Giants have the puck, play on. McGrattan's had to skate 70 feet and nearly pull Van der Meer's gloves off, because why would Van der Meer fight? We're 2-1 up away from home, yeah, playing well. He's our premium D man. Why would he take himself off the ice for 5 minutes? But he was forced into the situation. He dealt with it really well. And obviously, great respect between them at the handshakes after the game. I've got no issue at all with Van der Meer and McGrattan fighting, because it's part of the game and it's part of the game I love, but just not for starting a fight after a good hit.
Yeah,
you know, we always say they're there. The role of them there is to keep players honest. And Van der Meer's hit is as an honest a hockey play as you'll ever see.
Sorry, Paddy, did you pick up on Adam Keith trying to get at him before he got to Jim Van der Meer?
Oh, I didn't even see that. Nope.
Watch the clip back. Kiefer sees McGrattan heading for him. And Kiefer, he's going to his left. And when he sees him going for him, he turns back to him, tries to get into it, and gives him a wee bit of a jab with a stick. And but McGrattan didn't have eyes for anybody else but Jim Van der Meer. If you watch the highlights back, you'll see Kiefer once again stepping up, attempting to step up for a teammate. Absolute warrior.
Yeah. The one of the other fights that took place before we get to the Dobbs incident, one of the other fights that took place in the game was between Mike Quinnell and Stevie Lee. However, Mike Quinnell, it was a case of mistaken identity. He was knocked over by Dan Spang. He gets up and he grabs Stevie Lee, says, and he goes for it.
Aye, again, I think Stevie Lee caught him with a good right punch as well. So you've got to hand it to Mike Quinnell. It doesn't make a difference what size they are. He'll get stuck in there as well. And I really like that part of his game as well. So, it's one of those ones where you take a nudge. The speed of the game is that quick that, you know, Spang's 20 feet away before he realizes that he's actually get off on his feet. He obviously thought it was Stevie Lee and took a whack at him. So it's, it is what it is. So just get on with it.
Absolutely. Right. Let's move on. Excuse me. Let's move on to the Dobbs incident. And because of it's been such a talking point, I'm going to bring in the jingle.
Dobbs. Dobbs, Dobbs, yeah, yeah, Dobbs, 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 yeah, yeah.
After the goal that was scored by Matt Carter in the second period, there was an incident, I think, that most people have seen. We've stuck it on a View from the Bridge. Davey's done some fantastic work sticking it on a View from the Bridge Twitter account. An incident between David Rutherford and Robert Farmer, right from the puck drop after the goal was scored. Subsequently, Robert Farmer has been assessed by Dobbs and has been given a 5-game suspension. I'll start with yourself, David. Just your take on the incident.
I think that he's lucky that he's only got 5 games. Pretty dangerous play. He obviously loses it. You know, Rutherford, we'll obviously speak to him later. He's an agitator. He's got a job to do. He goes in there and he niggles away at him and he gets a reaction. Probably not the reaction that he was expecting. You know, I think, Rudy, we go down to Cardiff the other week there and he's doing the same thing with either Hotham or her dad. I can't remember who it was. And they end up having to drop the gloves. And I think that's what Rudy would want more than anything. You know, if you're going to come after me, lay me out with a hit, offer me to drop the gloves, force Adam Keefe to fight for me, you know, whatever it should be, and, you know, sort of Daryl Lloyd agitating role that Kiefer always had his back, you know, but it's just a cheap It's just a really, really cheap and dangerous play. He's very fortunate that he hasn't done more serious permanent damage than what he did. There's not an awful lot you can say about the incident. You know, it is what it is. He turned around. He's too hard cross-checked on the face. He's clearly broke his nose or certainly done a lot of damage there. And as I say, I think 5 games, he's got off quite light.
Says the red mist came down. The red mist came down, and as Davey says, he's two-handed cross-checked him right in the face.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rush of blood to the head, and it's one of those plays where, players know when they've made a mistake, and you sort of, I'm not saying that what he did was absolutely wrong. It's got his 5-game suspension, and you just get on with it. And you know, again, we are going to be talking to David Rutherford, so. We'll get his view on it, and I know he's not happy with it. And having a broken snout and a couple of stitches isn't great. He's not the best looking player in the world either. Like, and getting that added onto it, he's a wee bit uglier than that.
You say you're going to say that now before we bring him on. I'll bring that up.
There's no problem. But fair play to Rudy. He basically he went in for repairs. He tried to come back out again. And was just finding it difficult to breathe through the broken nose as well. So hopefully he'll be okay for this weekend. I'm sure he will. He'll probably wear a third face cage and get stuck in. But I think Farmer will be a wee bit brassed off because of that play. Again, it's one of those, we scored a power play goal. 5-minute major penalty for cross-checking. These plays happen in hockey, and again, Farmer, he wouldn't be one of my favorite players, but I'll tell you what, I really like his nasty side. I think that
this nasty side.
I like any sort of nasty side in a player. I really do. It makes him a wee bit. If he was wearing Tatum, I wouldn't argue about it.
Yeah, I'm says here. He's a player that has always wound me up. Watching him, and I think go back to his really early days when he came along. I'm near certain Lee Jamison was still with the Giants at the time. Farmer was just a kid starting to make his way. I think they had a fight in the Odyssey way back in the day. And he's always, and as he's grown, he's a big, big unit. You know, he's a real handling match, and he isn't someone that I've ever imagined leaving the kind of Panthers, certainly in the prime of his career. But, he's someone that would add to any team that he would be on. He's just got that size and that nasty streak that in this game, if you've got that and you've got the size to back it up, and he's got goals, he's got assists. You've seen a goal he scored against us there. Was it last season, the season before? Absolutely unbelievable tackers. Was it a penalty shot?
It was a penalty shot.
I can't remember. He scored an absolutely wonderful goal against us, So he's proved he's got a bit of skill to go with the size. So, unfortunate for Rudy, he's got the wrong end of the when the red mist has really came down there. But as I say, he's a quality player. It's disappointing for the Panthers fans. I'm sure that he's going to be sitting out for the next 2 or 3 weekends.
The referee was Tom Perring. He was right on the spot when it happened. And also, Tom Perring was seen to get a bit of a mention in the highlights package, Davey.
Yeah, you can't, that's borderline social media rule break there by Gary Moran saying, this game will depend. Of course, the game will depend on how the referee will ref it, but, that's undermining the referee before a puck's even been dropped. And, just bad form for me. Typical.
All the highlights, I say, and you catch it yourself, are available from the Panthers on their YouTube channel. We'll link that on A View from the Bridge.
Just touching on Gary Moran. Did you get any TFAs this weekend?
We got I got one from Simon Kitchen. Might ask it later on.
Okay, get on, no problem.
Okay, so it's that time again where, in association with our friends at Photocab, we give you the opportunity to award the Player of the Month trophy for February. We opened up nominations on Twitter yesterday, and from those votes, we got a short list of 4, which is currently being put to the public vote. You won't be putting 1, 2, 3 on this ballot paper, however. It's a straight first-past-the-post affair. So, the 4 players chosen by you for this month's award are number 12, Steve Saviano, number 31, Stephen Murphy, number 88, Ryan Martinelli, and number 91, David Rutherford. Voting is underway on our Twitter account at AVFTV, linked also on our Facebook account, or just go to twitter.com/AVFTV and choose which of these four you believe is worthy to succeed James Demarai as the Belfast Giants Player of the Month. Voting closes at noon on Friday, with the player receiving the award on Saturday at the game against the Manchester Storm. And once again, a big thanks to our friends at Fornicab for supporting this award. Yep, so there you have it, your four nominees for this month's Player of the Month competition. Davey, who gets your choice?
Paddy, once again, there's a fag paper between these ones. There's nothing to really separate them. Steve Saviano's had a couple of outstanding weekends. Martinelli, for me, has been really solid all month long. Rudy has came up with lots of really, really fantastic helpers at the right time. But for me, he's been there or thereabouts for several months now. A couple of months we had them as a combo with Jackson Whistle and Stephen Murphy. But for me, obviously, with Whist suffering from a wee bit of, you know, injury form, etc., and dropping out more, and Murph taking on the full load of the goaltending weekend on weekend, he's been sensational. Yeah, we've lost a couple of games, but he was the difference maker in the NIC. And when you've got a goaltender of this quality that can backstop you to wins like that, he gives us a chance to win every night. And he's the only player in a roster that can give you the chance to win every night. All your other players are supplementary to that. They can score goals, they can make assists, but Murphy can be the difference maker. And for me, the player of the month for February should be Stephen Murphy.
Simon.
I can hear Regan McCartney clapping.
Yeah, Murph's been great. I know, and again, he's, I think there's been a couple of games there, especially against the Cardiff, where he didn't really get much help, in fairness to him. But due to the fact that I think this guy he's done something positive in every game. You know, he's had a scrap against Cardiff and Andrew Lord. You know, in the first game against Cardiff in his first semi-final, he had a massive hit on Andrew Hoffman, which for that alone, I think he deserves Man or Player of the Month. And, he scored a goal, a couple of helpers. I think he's really stepped his game up in the last 6 weeks. And for me, it's Ryan Martinelli.
You know, Paddy, you'll have to come in with your top and safety worth. And Sizz is right. You could make an argument for a very, very strong argument for each and every one of those players, and probably two or three more, because it's been a pretty good month. Martinelli, when he came in way right back at the end of August and through the start of September, I remember watching his first game away at Cardiff and thinking that, you know, this big lad has the potential to be like a Cody, first season Cody Brookwell, if you like. Size, skill, power, fight if he needs to, which he proved the other night. You know, he's not going to be messed about, not let his teammates be messed about. And those feet of his are like booms in front of net. You know, he blocks so many shots with his feet. I wouldn't like to see a steal him. But, you know, the big man, Sizz is right, could make a very, very good argument. I can't argue with a single point he made there. He would be a worthy recipient.
It's interesting as well, some of the response we got on social media. Obviously, we put this out to nomination, and these are the four names we got forward, but there were a hell of a lot of other names that came forward as well. And I noticed as well, there was a bit of a chat between Alex Foster and Chris Higgins, with Chris Higgins saying, you know, who are the stats leaders for the month? You know, why aren't they in there? Of course, you know, David, you'd know that more than most. Maybe Blair Riley, Chris Higgins, all deserving of being nominated for this award. But it went to the popular vote, and these were the ones that were nominated. With regards to myself, I'm going for Saviano. I think the last couple of weeks he's been absolutely phenomenal. Yes, we have lost two games to the Cardiff Devils, and I spoke last week about how, you know, sometimes a team are just better than you for a game. And yes, there was a game against Fife, but overall, I think there have been some fantastic performances. And for me, Saviano showed this weekend, especially the class that he has and the ability he has in front of goal. One of his best mates is out of the game, and Alex Foster with an injury, and he's stepping up here to show exactly what can be done. And I've been really, really impressed. His eye for goal, his speed down the wing, his vision, and the fact that he's not afraid to get behind the net, get into those dirty areas in the corner and create, to hold up the puck when needs be, and to create in front of goal as well. So for me, Steve Saviano. What do you think of the claim from the likes of Higgy that maybe he should have been in there?
Yeah, I think it's magic that the players are interacting with the official podcast. You know, that just shows that there's quite a lot of these guys want to win this, and they're getting competitive with regards in the dressing room. I mean, one of the things that Boxy was saying on the webcast the other night is how, you know, how close and how good mates, that Saviano and Foster are. You know, the first guy on the bench after the game was Foster. He must have run down or jumped down from the corporate box where he's watching the game and came down to give Saviano a high five for his Man of the Match award. So I think it's great. I think it's absolutely brilliant. These guys are all chipping in and wanting to win the AVFTB Player of the Month award as well.
David?
Look, you can't argue. You know, I've said it many, many times over the number of years I've been doing the podcast. Stats don't lie. And there are players that you've got the likes of Riley and Higgy through this month, through previous months, that their stats should have just on their own just said there's only one nomination this month. It's Chris Higgins or it's Blair Riley or it's Alex Foster, whoever. And, you know, they've had great months. You have to shortlist these things. And it's not always about your numbers. You know, yes, Higgy's leading the team collectively through the season, through overall, and he's been sensational. And you could argue some of his plays, he's unplayable at times. You know, some of the moves he made one there the other night that made the highlight really just the same draw on a penalty. You know, he's just got absolute techers. And yeah, you could make a very, very strong argument for Higgy being in there this month, last month, December. And, I'm a fanboy. But, you know, these you have to go with what the popular vote was, you know, put it out there. And then these are the guys that came up. And it'd be hard to argue that anyone that picked it up this month wouldn't be a very worthy winner.
Absolutely. Well, if you want to cast your vote in this month's Player of the Month competition and see who's going to follow James Demarai with the award, then get yourself to @AVFTB on Twitter or twitter.com/AVFTB. We've got linked on our Facebook group as well. And cast your vote. And just looking here, we've got almost 500 votes. Almost 500 votes already. And that's not bad considering it was only just started this morning. So yeah,
it's more than the SDLP I'll get tomorrow when he's gone
back. Yes, it's the most important poll of the week. No bogeyman, no cash rush here. Right, well, you've heard us talk about him a couple of times, not least about what happened on Sunday, and then we've just spoken about the Player of the Month competition. We're delighted to be joined on the Views from the Bridge by David Rutherford. How are you, mate?
I'm doing great. You guys?
Yeah, grand. How's the nose?
It's a little sore, you know, but I guess it's healing. It's bruising quite well, so I guess that's just part of life, I suppose.
Let's start there. Obviously, it was one of the big flashpoints of Sunday. Just after the goal score, Carter scores the goal for the Panthers. There's a bit of coming together between you and Robert Farmer, and Farmer obviously gets the gate for the incident. What was your take on what happened?
To be honest with you, when I look back at it, I know my game. I walk the line. I agitate. I kind of look at myself as like almost like a Brad Marchand, Brendan Gallagher. But I don't know, honestly, they just scored. My thing is we wanted to have a good follow-up shift, honestly. It's weird. Everyone kept talking about me slew-footing him. And I actually said to a few people before I even saw the video, there's no way I slew-footed him. I'm like, when you think of slew-foot, honestly, God, if I was going to call it out, I'd think of Daryl Lloyd. and I gave him a little tap on the back of the leg, evidently, with my foot. And I honestly didn't even recognize I did it. And then just for the way it turned out, I almost lost my head with the first spear, which I didn't know till I saw the video, which kind of blew me away to the same spear Jared Spurgeon took on Minnesota Wild, maybe a couple weeks ago. And then I was like a little bit shocked once that happened. And then I just got cross-checked in the face. It was almost one of those things where I was kind of like wondering, like, I'm like, what are you going to do? And that was apparently what he was going to do. So I truly don't think he actually meant to do that bad, but it just generally happened. He broke my nose. My nose was on the other side of my face. I've had a few people tell me it's probably the grossest thing they've seen in hockey. So, I don't know. I know Farmer walks the line like I do. Like, there's no doubt about that. We play hard. We compete. We agitate. But it was probably one of the worst hits I've taken. Like, I guess if you take a good clean hit like I did in Sheffield, from a guy or something like that, you accept it, right? That's hockey, but I really don't. I don't think there's really much place for that type of action. That reminded me kind of like the Donald Brashear slashing the guy in the head, the Marty McSorley thing. It's unfortunate, but I truly, as much as my face looks terrible right now, I really don't think he meant to do it like that. I think it's just a turn of bad luck, honestly.
Is it just the case of the red mist comes down? Can you see that happen? The fact that it's just, he's lost the way of it and he's just went for it. You know, that happens at time from time to time.
Well, I don't know. I kind of like, when I think about it, they just scored, so they didn't really have a reason to agitate or lose it, you know? So it does, the play, if you're breaking down the game, doesn't make sense to me. But I think evidently it happened. It was definitely a turning point too. We ended up scoring on the power play and whatnot, and kept our title chase alive. Not ideal, but I really don't think Farmer meant to do that, but he definitely meant to do something, if that makes sense. I'll leave it at this. It was hockey, man. It happened. I joked about it with a couple guys today. I'm surprised it took this long for it to happen for me in pro sports. So, you know, I know I walked the line. If you live by the sword, you kind of die by the sword, but it was probably the worst thing I've taken. So it is what it is, you know, like I didn't miss a practice or anything. I'll be ready to go Saturday night.
Rudy, it's Simon here. Obviously, you know, the broken nose and a couple of stitches, has it improved your looks any?
Well, ironically, if we're going to laugh about this, my mother got into town yesterday. This is her first time over to Ireland, Northern Ireland. We had photos set up for the causeway today. So, I had giant sunglasses on for that one, but, it is what it is. She joked about it. She's like, I only watch so many games. It seems every game I turn on, you're laying on the ice. So it's kind of funny. The last one she watched was Sheffield. So I just told her to stop watching games.
So. And obviously, you know, the way that you're Belfast now, just over a year, you've had a couple of injuries and I mean, you started off this season like a house on fire. You picked up an injury and then you get back, you got your legs going again. And every time you seem to get going, will you pick up a wee niggle? How do you get away from that? I mean, obviously you want to play every single game. And you've been recently really, really starting to pick up the points, the power play points, and really putting an effort into the team.
Yeah, no, honestly, I think the injury really, the first one, the shoulder injury, really hurt because I had started so well. I pretty much sacrificed the whole summer to have the best season I could here. Honestly, I think the injuries kind of maybe sidetracked me, and I got a little down on myself. Maybe got away from what made me successful, like doing as much as I could to better myself. And then the whole neck injury one, going kind of like almost like paralyzed for about 45 minutes, and I had to deal with more of the trauma of that happening, and probably more mental problems with recovering from that. So I tried to just get back to basics with that. You know what? I'll give a lot of credit to Wally. Really helped me through that time because I was pretty down with that stuff. And the way he was able to talk to me and help me try and find my game to get back, I definitely think he did a lot for me. I had a long conversation one night with him when I was sitting in the car parking lot at Virgin, and he definitely did help me to kind of find my mental game again. So there's times that you're going to go through like a ruts like that, and evidently no player wants to do it. Especially this year, I didn't want to do it. But that's hockey, right? That's life. You know, you kind of hit little ruts. And for me, all it really, as much as I love the score, we got on a roll winning, and that's what matters. So I think for the most part, even though like some people can get upset with like the way the whole Cardiff weekend went and whatnot, we've done a lot of good things this year. I think that's a lot of credit to having three great lines that they're doing everything, the leadership that we have with this team, and how they've all ran it. It's it's a tough league when you get injuries to really try and stay consistent, and we've done a good job with that for the most part.
Rudy, it's Davey. I'll come at you with a kind of, I suppose, more stats-based question. And, you know, I think you're 45, 46 points through 46 games. So roughly at a point a game through the season, you have 15, 16, 17 something points on the special teams. And, you know, you'll not set yourself, you'll probably set yourself in your head some personal targets, but you must be pretty pleased to come away another elite league season, more or less, under your bench, just touching on 20 goals. And as I say, at a point a game.
You know what? I think you always set goals. I definitely had a lot of goals, but like injuries definitely sidetracked a lot of that this year for me. But at the end of the day, I don't think a single guy cares about points. You want to win championships. I'm not going to say we've come up short because I still believe that there's something that could happen here. Maybe some people think we're crazy for thinking that, but this team still is thinking about Saturday night, getting those 2 points and trying to move forward. It's one of those things that it doesn't matter where you are. I've won the ECHL, I've won the CHL, the Canadian Hockey League. It doesn't matter what your individual stats are. Everyone wants winners. We have a lot of winners on this team. So even if we do come up short this year, there's a lot of good things we've done. You know, like I think we're way ahead of the pace we were last year for a chance at the title. But you got to give credit where like teams like Cardiff, they're just not losing games either. They're playing great hockey. So it's disappointing at times, but it's so different over here where the league is what matters compared to anywhere else. You just don't see that in like hockey. It's so much like Premier League soccer that like sometimes it confuses you. It makes it harder for sure, but it's something where, like in North America, you get hot at the right time, you can win a championship. Here, you got to be so consistent the whole year. But if you look at this group as a whole, what we've done since that December group, like how can you not be happy as a fan base? Like when you lose a couple games here and there, that's going to happen. That's hockey. We're not the Golden State Warriors here, winning 80 games a year. It's something that this group's competed hard and worked hard all year. Even if it doesn't happen, and I'm not saying that's not where we're thinking. It's generally, this team believes they still have a chance to win. But it's something I don't want anyone to ever really look back and be like, you know, this team didn't win. But we still have accomplished a lot.
Well, that's the thing, is that you look at the fixtures ahead, really, and you see that we've got the Cardiff Devils twice in Ice Arena Wales. We've got, you know, a game against the Sheffield Steelers, and Cardiff themselves have some difficult games. How high is the determination in that room?
Man, it doesn't matter who you're playing. And like I've said that with this league is so, it's so inconsistent. Any team can beat anyone any night. It happens. Like look at last weekend, Edinburgh almost stole points from Cardiff. You know, and that's a team that everyone said was pretty much written off. They gave that team as much as they could handle. It's, you gotta be on the ball every single night with this league. And I'd be naive if I said we were looking for it like all the way to the Cardiff final end weekend. We need to focus on just beating Manchester and winning a period at a time.
Of course, you were the first winner of the Player of the Month competition out of View from the Bridge, and you're up again this month. But let me ask you a quick question. Your other three people you're nominated against are Steve Saviano, Stephen Murphy, and Ran Martinelli. You can't vote for yourself. Who are you voting for?
Honest to God, every single one of them has brought a different side. Like with losing Wiss, who happens to be my roommate, that really hurts because they were doing such a good job of rotating. And you look at Martinelli, he has been, when he's mean and tough back there, like I've said this to him, I don't like going against him in practice because the guy really takes up space. He hits hard. Like he's a hard guy to compete against. So he does a lot of things that people don't really recognize all the time, but he's had such a good, transition as he's got like more comfortable over here, and he's had a phenomenal month. And then Sal, like no one has to pump his tires more than Foster. Let's call that a spade a spade. But he's been good. He's been really good. He's a water bug out there. He works his tail off. He does the little things right. And so like honestly, God, just to be nominated is a great honor as it is. But like the guys have all played phenomenal. In my opinion, I'd be shocked if Sal didn't win Player of the Month for the whole league.
Well, you've pinned your colours to the mast, and thanks for joining us, mate. Good luck this weekend. I hope the news gets better.
Yeah, thank you.
Right, on to the next section around the league. We've already dealt with Dops and the Farmer incident, so we'll move on. The Challenge Cup final. On Sunday, the Cardiff Devils will host the Sheffield Steelers at Ice Arena Wales for this year's final. And with the Devils riding high in the Elite League standing, there's no doubt that they'll hope to be, this will be the first marker in a possible sweep of trophies. While Paul Thompson's men, well, they know they're up against it with a travel to, with having to travel to Cardiff for the game, coupled with the displeasure of being forced by league rules to play their league fixture against the Coventry Blaze the night before. For a quick discussion on this, who else are we going to invite on but other than our resident part-time Steeler and part-time review from the Bridge host, Mr. Mark Hitchcock. How are you, mate?
I'm very well. I'm looking forward to chatting about the Cup Final, if you don't cut me off this time, that is.
I'm not going to cut you off this time. We've got plenty to talk about. It's going to be a very, very difficult game, considering you're playing the Coventry Blaze the night before and then having to travel to Ice Arena Wales for this match.
Yeah, well, any game against Cardiff away is difficult.
Yep, he pretty much called it. Couldn't care less. Right, around the league. It was confirmed last week that the Guildford Flames would be the latest team to join the Elite League, stepping up from the EPIHL alongside Milton Keynes. There appears to be a mooted and badly needed revamp of the second tier of UK hockey, but the arrival of the Flames may set the cat among the pigeons in the financial hierarchy of our own league. Time will tell, but a restructure of the conference system could see the Giants in the Gardener. I'm looking forward to the trips to the Spectrum. Their fans renowned for their passion for their team. Always a good trip down to Guildford. Regards to results, the Cardiff Devils are only 4 wins in 7 games away from their first league title since 96-97. Back then when the likes of Kip Noble, Doug McEwen, Vezio Secretini and some bloke called Thornton lifted what was then the 4th league title in the club's history. It was a 4-point weekend for the latest batch this weekend, including an 8-0 home thrashing of the abject Coventry Blaze, and a come-from-behind overtime victory in Murrayfield, which keeps their train rolling. However, with 4 of those 7 games coming against the Giants and the Steelers, while many may see them as champions-elect already, there's still a job to do. Mixed weekend for the Steelers. A win at home over the nearest and dearest was followed by a 6-3 defeat in Kirkcaldy, possibly derailing their title hopes morally, if not mathematically. Kirkcaldy appears to be the home of such falls this season. We know that only too well. The Blaze, as mentioned earlier, followed their abject performance at Ice Arena Wales with a victory over the Storm at home in the Sky Dome. Mark Wantz stole the points in the shootout after Valchak failed to beat Stewart. It was the second loss of the weekend for the Storm, albeit with an overtime loser's point. The night before in the Drizzle Dome, the Capitals came from a losing position to win 5-2. It really remains a battle for that final playoff spot between Dundee, Manchester and Coventry. But we'll discuss that with Omar Pasha later in the show. Finally, congratulations to the Brayhead clan, wrapping up the Gardiner Conference in February and securing that second seed for the playoffs quarterfinals. A 4-1 win over the Dundee Stars in both teams' only game of the weekend brings yet another conference title to the shopping centre. Clan celebrated with the exuberance many would expect of a team who haven't actually achieved anything higher as yet. Obviously, they're still stinging from that N2 Cup defeat at the start of the season. Normal hockey superstitions of not touching the conference trophy ahead of the playoffs were dispensed with, and a double page spread in the paper, I believe, must be a precursor to the open top bus trip down Sucky Hall Street. In all seriousness though, we aren't one to mock a conference title win, are we? So congratulations to them. Who knows, as I said earlier, we may be next season battling with them for that very same conference title. Quick look at the league table. Well, Cardiff, Belfast and Sheffield have all played the same amount of games, but Cardiff lead the way, 71 points to Belfast 64 and Sheffield 63. Brayhead have the second seed, but they're in fourth place currently with 49 points. Nottingham, 43 games played, 48 points. And then Fife, 45 points from 45 games. Manchester, Coventry and Dundee still battling it out, but Manchester on 44 games, Coventry on 47 games, and Dundee on 44 games. But Manchester and Coventry on 39 points, with Dundee 3 points behind. It's going to be a real battle for Coventry there. Edinburgh, well, they're, as usual, propping up the table, 44 games played, 32 points. So with regards to the Guildford Flames, Davey, new team in the league, bolsters the league, but I don't think people should underestimate what they'll bring to the league.
Certainly not. They're a team that has decent financial backing. They'll be able to put together a good roster. They'll want to start off their elite league campaign in some style. You know, we played them a number of years ago in the Crossover Cup, and since then they've kicked on as a franchise. You know, they've been pretty dominant down there in the EPL, and it's probably time that they took that step forward. I don't know what that says for the EPL, or whether that, you know, were they forced into this position more than they really wanted to come and grab it? And is there certainly the indigenous, you know, population, if you want to say, the British players there, will they want to make that jump to the elite league? You know, some of them could already be playing in the elite league if they really, really wanted to. So it'll be interesting. There's obviously only so many top level, elite level Brits to go around. And yes, Guildford have a few there. Will they be able to hold on to them? Will other teams be trying to poach their players? So it's all good. It's good that the league's expanding. You know, how many years ago was it we were standing in Nottingham? Was it 16 league? You're having league, a laugh, yeah, or whatever it was. Now we're looking at progression from 10 to 12 within one season. And obviously Manchester coming in a couple of years ago as well. Dundee back in the league. Fife, all the Scottish teams, Clan coming along. So, you know, from that small acorn of six, sort of, you know, with the arena teams, Belfast, Coventry as well, you know, and holding it all together for a number of years there. And now, organically, the league growing into 12 teams, it's only good for the future.
Simon?
Yeah, I mean, I've played in Guildford before a couple of times and really enjoyed going down the Spectrum before. And obviously, you've got the Homer referee and Stefan Hogarth as well. So that's always handy. But, you know, I think it's, as Davey touched on it, you know, I think it's great that the Elite League are expanding out those 12 teams. And you've already touched on a number of weeks ago, Paddy, about the KHL coming in maybe in a couple of years' time that might overtake and you get an extra team in with the KHL disbanding after 3 years and maybe a London team coming out of the woodwork as well. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens. But I think, you know, Davey's right. They've got a lot of money around the south coast of England, and I think they could be a surprise package next year.
What about, says, I'll stick with yourself, what about Cardiff? They're rolling at the minute. As I said in that sort of roundup, they're only four wins from winning the league title.
Listen, Paddy, they're at the top of the league for a reason. You know, we certainly gave it a good go. Losing those two games against them a couple of weeks ago, you know, has definitely put them in pole position. But they've got some tough games coming up. You know, it's not going to be easy for them. Or I wouldn't like to think it'd be easy for them in Manchester on Friday night. And then they're concentrating on their cup final on Sunday in their own rank. So, you know, they've got to definitely have a couple of tough games. They've got to go to Nottingham. They've got a doubleheader against Sheffield, I think, as well. So there's still a lot of points to be played for. It's not all done and dusted just yet. So, you know, while it's still available, you keep on plugging away and just try and concentrate on your own games.
And Davey, the Braehead clan of the Gardner Conference wrapped up in February and they seem pretty happy about it.
You know, a trophy's a trophy, Paddy. Maybe a little too much pomp and circumstance for, you know, what is effectively best team in Scotland. But, you know, they'll probably raise a banner and certainly playing We Are the Champions and stuff's a wee bit over the top. But, you know, congratulations to them. You can only beat what's put in front of you, and they've gone on and won it fairly comfortably, so I suppose congratulations are due.
Absolutely. Right. Time to move on to the fan agenda in association with Belfast Giants TV. What should we be talking about? Leslie fired in a brilliant one this week, and I'm going to put it to you. Given the addition of two more teams to the league, good quality British players are going to be in bigger demand. Are there enough of them to go around 12 teams, or will some teams struggle to find players with the ability and the desire to step up to elite level? I'll start with yourself, David.
Kind of just what I was touching on there in the Guildford one, you know, with different things that could be going on next season. Most teams are gonna need at least six British players to make up a roster. We're fortunate, and we've got Whistle, we've got Murphy, Sheds, Boxy, Toey, Garsh. Who else is up? Is that our food? Missing anybody there?
Toey, Garsh. Murphy. You think that's Jackson?
Yeah, so, you know, we've got those guys that we will either try to lock down. Certainly the vast majority of them, or maybe one, two changes, whatever. But, you know, each team are going to have to look around. So if you have 12 teams, let's do the sums really quickly. 12 times 6, you know, 72 elite-level British players that are going to be required to fill roster slots and more than that, because there'll be teams that run high-level British players rather than imports. And up in Scotland, they obviously run a lot more Brits as well. So, you know, you could be looking at 100 guys, you know, looking jobs in this league next season. Is there 100 out there? You know, it's an extra, you know, you're looking at Milton Keynes and Guildford having to bring what they've already got, the likes of a Lee Jamieson, back into the league, who's obviously a very talented D-man and has a great wealth of experience now to bring in, whether he wants to make that step back up. You know, he played Elite League, he dropped down to EPL and seemed like being the big fish in the smaller pond. So it's a great question by Leslie. I always love, she comes up with a great one almost every week. And I'll pass that over to Sizz for his thoughts.
I think it's it's an opportunity. And you were talking earlier, Davey, about the, you know, obviously the guys at Guildford, you know, maybe they're capable of playing at a higher level and they haven't jumped up and taken that opportunity. And, you know, some guys are just like that. You know, some guys don't want to test themselves at the highest level. And, you know, I think they're probably a bit stupid, to be honest. You want to play at the highest level. Yes, you want to win, but a lot of people, you know, with Guildford and Telford and that league as well, you know, there's money being bandied about there, and they're maybe getting the opportunity to earn more money at a lower level and not have as much responsibility. So it is a difficult one, but certainly if it was myself, I'd want to play at the highest level I possibly could. And, you know, and I definitely think it's going to help the British team ultimately as well, because if you play with better players, you get better. You know, you've got the opportunity of 14 imports, and you've got, you know, the experience of, for argument's sake, you know, Jim Van der Meer and you know, I was speaking to Boxy about him the other night, and you know, he was saying that Vanley doesn't say an awful lot, but when he does talk, everybody listens. And that's exactly what you want to be bringing in. So, you know, Guildford coming into the league next year with those British players that they have, you know, the Kevin Phillips, who's played at this level. You know, Esders was there for a while, Matteau was there for a while. So you've got guys that definitely can take that step up. So it'd be interesting to see how it pans out. And, you know, would I change any of our imports? Or, sorry, any of our British players? I said at the start of the season I wouldn't. And if we went in the next season with those six British players again, I don't think I'd have a problem with it.
Two questions came in, one on Twitter and one on email, which are kind of similar, so I'll run them run them together. I'll start with you. It says, well, Crystal McCord, first of all, sorry, Kirsten, she was looking for the podcast to be out earlier in the week. Sorry about that. She says, what is the likelihood of the AHL having a four-man system next season? And if so, do you think this would change the style of play? And we also had an emailed one from James, who's going back to something he was harping about for ages. But the buy-in, six import referees, 12 teams next year, with 12 teams next year, and use them to introduce a four ref system at games. As clubs buy in players, writing the rules that each club has to pay one half salary for the six import refs, which would work out at maybe £10,000 per club per season. And that would cover the extra cost over the course of the season and improve the game for everyone. Simon?
I would, again, with Kirsten saying about the fourth official, I think everybody would love to see that. I don't think it's going to happen. With regards to every team chipping in £10,000, that is definitely not going to happen. That £10,000 is a lot of money. In this league, yeah, there's some of the big teams could afford to do it, and maybe, you know, a 50-50 ticket going missing in Sheffield could be able to cover that at a weekend. But, you know, I can't see that happen. I would love to see the fourth official and the officials currently that are on the IHL roster. I would love to see them getting assistance, but no, that's just not going to happen.
David,
what's the question, Paddy?
The question for Kirsten was basically, what is the likelihood of a four-man system, and do you think it'll change the style of play? But also from James, whether it was feasible to purchase, let's say, bring in six import referees to cover it and improve the game.
No, I don't see the us going back to four-man system anytime soon, purely down to finances. Does it change? It doesn't particularly change the style of game. It changes the way it's called. You maybe Yeah, well, it might change the style of games to some people that would, you know, you have to temper what way you play your game because you get caught up for absolutely everything. Everything should be called and you play that zero tolerance, you know, and that is something. If it up the level of consistency, I'm all for the four-man system. They get more right than they get more wrong because there's an extra pair of eyes out there. Financially, can we afford each team £10,000 to do this? No, teams aren't going to chip in £10,000. Now, imagine if there was a commercial director, somebody who was in charge of like getting sponsorship for these kinds of things. Imagine if the league was proactive enough to like, even advertise a job like that, let alone fulfill it. But you know, that's a completely different subject. The money's not there. I don't believe if teams had £10,000 extra each in their budget that they would necessarily want it to go towards officiating.
That's it for this week in the TFAs, because we've quite a long show, I think. And thanks to everybody for sending them in at AVFTV on Twitter, hashtag TFA. Keep them coming in through the week. Only one game for the Belfast Giants this week, and that's against the Manchester Storm. Of course, the last time that the Storm took on the Giants in the SSE Arena, they walked away with a 2-1 victory. And it was a good Christmas time victory for my next guest. Of course, that is the player coach of the Manchester Storm, Omar Pasha. How are you, mate?
Not too bad yourself, Paddy.
Not too bad, mate. You guys are in a dogfight at the minute. There are three teams going for that last playoff spot. Maybe form of late hasn't been great. What are your feelings on how the Storm are playing?
You know, it's going to be a race to the end, as you can see. But recently, we had a really bad game on Saturday, our worst game of the year, I feel. We were terrible for whatever reason. You know, we lost to Finesse the week before for an injury, and we were playing one guy short, but at the same time, you know, it just wasn't good enough. You know, we weren't good on Saturday. We bounced back really well on Sunday, but, you know, we didn't get any luck at all. I think we all played the Blaze. I thought we managed to puck really well for a lot of that game, but, you know, we hit a few posts and we couldn't bury them. So, yeah, that's the story of our weekend, and that's probably one of the reasons why we're still fighting for a playoff spot.
Is that what it's been? It's just been short on players. It's tough when you're up against teams that are rolling four lines, especially despite the fact, you know, the ice that you're used to in those small, but when you're up against teams that are rolling four lines and you guys have suffered quite a few injuries this season and battling against them has been difficult. Though looking at it, the game that you played the other week against the Sheffield Steelers where you came so near but so far.
Yeah, I mean, last week against Sheffield we were full strength and, you know, we, like every team in this league, you know, we're obviously battling some injuries that we have players that probably aren't supposed to play that are playing. But, you know, we had a good game against Sheffield. Again, sometimes hockey comes down to luck and decisions and, you know, different circumstances, and that's what cost us the game against Sheffield. And, you know, recently we've not necessarily had the luck. We had a really bad performance against Edinburgh, but other than that, you know, the bounces are not necessarily coming our way, but that's when we have to dig deep and, you know, turn that around ourselves, because, you know, nobody's going to feel sorry for us. So we just got to work hard, dig deep, and you're right, like, we need to get everybody back 100%, but exactly like you said, every team struggles with that at this time of the year.
You've got 8 games remaining in the regular season. Obviously, this weekend is against Cardiff Devils on Friday night and then ourselves over at the SSE on Saturday. But then looking ahead, you've got 2 games home and away against the Dundee Stars. They look to be key games in your battle to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, they will. But, you know, you just want to go one game at a time. I think since we've been here from the start of the season, we truly believe we can beat anybody in this league if we play our style of play. And, you know, recently, at times, we got away from that. And, you know, let's build on this performance that we had against the Blaze and bring that against Cardiff on Friday and after up to Belfast. But we're trying to look at one game at a time, because truly, you've seen it all this year. Anybody can beat anybody in this league. And I'm confident we would play anybody on any given night and we would have a good chance to win.
Well, as you say, you know, you can beat any team at any night, and you've shown that against the Belfast Giants. Your record this season is a pretty good one, and the games we've played so far have been real battles, not least the absolute shooing that the Giants took when they were over at the Storm Shelter. What are you expecting this weekend?
Well, it's going to be a tough game. You know, it's any time you play, you know, Belfast that are harder than when we play them, I mean, I think at the time when we played them, they were playing really well, and then they got back on another winning streak. So, you know, it's tough. You know, it's the Belfast Giants. It's a team that's competing in the top three for the last 2-3 months now. And, you know, they have good players everywhere. Solid defensemen, solid forwards, good goalies. And they play a good structured system where it's not easy to get goals out of. So, you know, it is what it is. It's going to be a tough game, but like I said, I'm confident with the group we have going into any game, and we had success in that range. I mean, you look at the few games we played there, we won one and we lost one with 10 seconds left in overtime. Mm-hmm. You know, so we can hopefully build on that going in Saturday morning and thinking about all the positives we've had in that building.
Fantastic, mate. Well, listen, obviously I'll not wish you well for this weekend, but we hope you do well going into the, in this chase to get in the playoffs. Cause I suppose you've shown before with Hull that you can take a team to the playoff finals and compete there. So, best of luck.
Thanks
to Pash. Obviously he must have been driving during that, the sound quality. I hope you could hear what he was saying. Anyway, let's bring in his boss man. A man that a lot of people know as Neil Russell, but on this show, we'll always know him as the coach. How are you doing, mate?
Hey, boys. How's it going?
Not too
all
bad.
Good, all good.
Hey, coach.
As I've just said to your player coach, the run of form of the Manchester Storm of late is not great.
No, it hasn't been great. I mean, last weekend was a particular disappointment, I have to say. Certainly last Saturday night, I'm sure Pash probably touched on that as well. I mean, it was, you know, it was arguably, over the last two seasons, arguably our worst performance. Totally unacceptable, to be brutally honest with you. And a bit of a line was drawn Saturday evening straight after that game. And, you know, we saw a much improved performance on Sunday in Coventry. You know, and in fairness, I mean, we were very unlucky not to skate away with the 2 points in that game. Where I thought we dominated the vast majority of play in that game. But, you know, listen, we've been losing a lot in overtime and penalty shots this season. And whilst, you know, we've got, what is it, one win in the last nine, we've been picking up points along the way there as well. But, you know, certainly last weekend was a particular disappointment where, you know, you kind of felt that, you know, you pick up 2 points at home to Edinburgh, you'll pick up a point in the road, maybe 2 points in Coventry, you've nearly secured your playoff berth. And now we're right in the dogfight. And, you know, for the first few months of the season, you know, we were, you know, beating Belfast a couple of times, beating Cardiff a couple of times, you know, pulling off some great results, beating Nottingham at home, and, you know, our inter-conference record was okay. But really, from the turn of the new year, our form has been sketchy. And, as I say, last weekend was very disappointing, but a bit of a line in the sand moment for our team. And, yeah, let's see what the next few weeks holds.
Over the last number of weeks, and going back, you know, you've said it yourself, and you said last time you were on this show, you didn't want to go down the old Nottingham Panthers route of injuries. One of the most recent injuries that you've got is the one to Bissonnette that he picked up in a game against Milton Keynes midweek. Now, I'm going to ask you a difficult one here, coach, because that was obviously a game that maybe was avoidable, but it was commercial pressures that put you into it. Is that a frustration, or have commercial pressures been put ahead of Elite League success?
Ooh, straight in there, Paddy.
Did you expect anything
No, definitely. I was thinking, what question is he going to come up with tonight to try and stump me? Listen, the bottom line on it is, the Milton Keynes Lightning and Stoke Bison in the EPL, who both fall under Planet Ice / Silver Blades ownership, both lost fixtures due to the Manchester Phoenix folding in the EPL. And, you know, that was quite a significant commercial hit for our overall ownership. You know, Mike Petrus, Mark Johnson. And there was, Milton Keynes needed to fulfill a fixture to look after their season ticket holders and what have you, and needed to try and make it in some way an attractive proposition. And yes, I got the call. At the end of the day, commercial things do, you know, whenever the big boss man calls, you got to kind of do as you're told. And certainly it wasn't a three-line whip. It was a request. But, you know, whenever you think about it, the overall business, it's important that the overall business thrives. And And, you know, we've got to play our part. And, yeah, listen, was the timing bad from our point of view? Yeah, it wasn't great. Far from it, you know. But it is what it is. And, you know, we led the fixture. We brought quite a few Aldring and Maces guys, a few Witness Why guys with us. Kept a few guys like Trevor Johnson and Mike Clement at home and a couple of the NBA guys as well. But yeah, unfortunately, Matt Bissonnette picked up an injury in that game, Paddy. And, you know, Bissonnette has been, he's been one of our kind of four or five top key scorers. Guys. Yeah, he's been a really great find for us this year. Very, very confident on the puck, got great vision and picks out a pass brilliantly well. And, you know, he's, as you say, he's, find the back of the net quite a bit as well. So I missed him last weekend big time. He kind of helps quarterback our power play. He's excellent on the penalty kill. And as I say, he's one of those creative guys going forward. So he's, you know, he's going to be out again this weekend. It looks more than likely. And yeah, it's a big hole for us. Overall, I can understand the business decision side of things, but timing wise, it definitely could have been better from our perspective.
Coach, you've got, you're 3 points ahead of Dundee at the minute. You played the same amount of games, and I think you're in the same points with Coventry, but they've played two or three games more.
Three games.
A couple of really big games this weekend, Friday and against Cardiff, and then you're obviously in Belfast on Saturday. But you must be looking towards that doubleheader against Dundee in a couple of weeks' time, because that could be absolutely crucial for heading into the playoff spots.
Yeah, big time, Sis. I mean, you know, this weekend, you know, up against two powerhouses in the league. I mean, we've got Cardiff coming in here on Friday night, and we've actually had a decent record against Cardiff. Beat them early season at the Storm Shelter. Beat them around Christmas time at Ice Arena Wales. You know, you look at some teams, and you know, we match up okay against them. You know, they're obviously absolutely stacked, and really are motoring now as the final stretch of the season comes along, but. You know, it's going to be a difficult weekend for us, but as I said, yeah, I mean, a line in the sand was drawn for certainly from my side of things with the team last weekend. And, you know, we saw that reaction Sunday. So I'm expecting to see exactly the same work rate, tenacity, all the cliches, all the important buzzwords, this weekend against Cardiff and obviously the Giants in Belfast on Saturday night. And, you know, you look at those and you're kind of hoping that you pick up a couple of points here and there. And then, as you quite rightly say, I mean, we've got Dundee twice and we've got Edinburgh still remaining. And those are key games. I mean, our record this year against the likes of Dundee has been pretty poor, to be honest with you. I mean, we've lost three times in Dundee. They've beaten us once at the Storm Shelter. We have been successful a couple of times at the Storm Shelter against them. But overall, you know, that those are a couple of games on the road up there that we'd have been looking to get away with the points. But listen, it goes back to what we've all been saying throughout the course of this season, you know, and the old cliche again. Says, and I hear you saying it on Giants Live as well, you know, with Shane and what have you on a week-by-week basis. Any team can beat anyone on any given night in this league. And, you know, whilst there's, you know, the 14 imports and what have you that we have in this league now, it has allowed parity. And, you know, we've seen it ourselves. I mean, the Storm beating Belfast in Belfast, Storm comprehensively beating Belfast at the Storm Shelter one night. I remember standing with Paddy, and I know Paddy wasn't happy that night, that's for sure. But yeah, listen, next 3 weeks is going to be absolutely critical. A big thing from my perspective is, and I said this to all the guys, and they're more than aware, it's important that we continue as a franchise to show progress. And, you know, we've shown it off the ice this year. Paddy will testify it with his visits down to the Storm Shelter. And, you know, we're pushing forward and showing a lot of progress off the ice. Got to continue to show that on the ice. And, yeah, big 3 weeks coming up.
Coach, it's your old mate Davey here. And,
David.
How are you, my friend?
Are you still missing me?
Of course, badly, you know.
Get on with the question, David.
21st of February, Coach, you know, there was an Elite League board meeting. 22nd of February, your very, very close friend, David Sims, comes out and says, history will show that yesterday was a bad day for hockey. Want to discuss that?
Listen, I think, you know, Simsy, isn't he, on the likes of social media, kind of throws things out there. I mean, a lot of things, Davey, are discussed at boardroom level. You know, it's a 10 teams around that table, soon to be 12, and, you know, there's a lot of differing opinions in certain things and what have you. And, you know, listen, sometimes things are thrown out there and, you know, decisions are made and then maybe there's a bit of retrospective thinking on it and what have you. And, you know, I think it's something that the league as a whole will have to come to some form and will come to some form of agreement on, you know, the league structure and what way it's all set up as we move forward. And, you know, I think it's something that we'll see over the next month or so. I would imagine that a lot of those I's will be dotted and a lot of those T's will be crossed. But as for Simsy's comment, that's Simsy been Simsy.
Coming back to the Storm and how you're playing it, obviously you said this, and I think Pash said it in an interview as well, that you know, on any given night, you do have the ability to beat any team. Obviously, you haven't actually beat the Sheffield Steelers, but the other week you came very, very close, and maybe in a bit of controversial circumstances, it should have been a bit different. Your take on this season so far, because you have had this dip. You have had, you know, you are now in a playoff dogfight that maybe a month or two ago you didn't think you'd be in.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, as I kind of said at the start there, the first 3 months of the season, you know, was exactly the Storm brand of hockey that the Pash and I set out and the recruit at the during the summertime last year. That team that played with a bit of an edge, bit of intensity, you know, that grit and what have you, and kind of turned the Storm shelter into a bit of a fortress. Now, of course, you look at the, you know, your grittier type players. Dallas Earhart breaks two fingers, can't really grip a stick properly, but he plays on. Your other kind of big power forward in Patrick Valcak, he was out of the lineup for 8 weeks with his shoulder. And then, of course, Eric Nielsen, the other kind of tough guy, if you, for want of a better term, he's out of the lineup for 9 weeks. You know, so those kind of guys that had that physical presence that, you know, we brought them in for that reason, to play that physical game and, you know, establish that Storm brand of hockey. All those three guys all went down at pretty much the same time. And, it kind of like changed how we had to play. Someone like Darian Dzinski there, who's like an absolutely fantastic hockey player. You know, Darian was and has been throughout the course of the season, been lent on heavily for our offense. But Darian Dzinski's at his best whenever he kind of like can play that chippy role. I mean, I'm sure maybe Sizz will remember, and maybe yourself, Paddy, from being at the Storm shelter. I know Davey doesn't travel the away games anymore, but Matt Nickerson, I mean,
you're gonna regret that, mate.
Darian, I'm getting them back for that question earlier on. Darian Dzinski and Matt Nickerson, I mean, Z just gets under the skin of Nicker the whole time. You can see it. And that's just the kind of edge that Z can play with whenever he's got kind of, you know, Valcak and Nielsen and Earhart around him as well. But it's one of those things, Paddy, where, you know, every team will have a blip throughout the course of a season. And our blip has kind of, It's almost like role reversal from the first 3 months to the second half of the season here, where we just kind of whatever. And I don't like using injuries and all the rest, but just the fluidity and in the lines and the cohesiveness that we had forged in those early couple of months of the season kind of got disrupted quite badly. But as I say, listen, I know Bissonnette's out this weekend as well, but it's a massive opportunity for our guys. And one thing about our guys that we have seen this year against the kind of the bigger teams is step up. And like every team, you're always searching for consistency. And as I say, the next 3 or 4 weeks are going to be really interesting to tell.
So yeah, like you say, you've got the Cardiff Devils on Friday night, the Belfast Giants on Saturday night, and that's leading into what is going to be a difficult, 7-8 games in the remainder of the season. You've got Coventry up against you, you've got Dundee up against you. How likely is it you're going to make those playoffs?
I mean, I'm not even considering anything otherwise, Paddy, to be honest with you. It's it's a bit of a dogfight, but we do have those three games in hand on Coventry. We've got Edinburgh at the Storm Shelter. Dundee have got to come back to the Storm Shelter. We've got to go to Dundee one more time. And put it like this, as I've already kind of intimated in the earlier chat there, everything this season is about progression. You know, as a second-year franchise, we've shown that progression commercially. We've shown the progression up in the stands with bums and seats and a couple of sellouts this year and what have you. So we've shown that progression. And, you know, as I said to you, the players are more than aware that on the ice, the progression has got to be continued to be shown to aid the overall organisation. And, you know, it's a non-negotiable for me. Of course, it's, you know,
we'll have tricky moments, and we've got a very difficult weekend coming up here. Nobody's naive to that fact. But when this team play with the edge and play with that intensity, I mean, there's not too many. I'll give you a perfect example. You know, and other coaches have said it to me, and other general managers. I mean, whenever our team are on it, they'll go that extra mile. I mean, remember Killer phoning me around Christmas time, you know, saying, I've never seen a team block as many shots. He said, you must have blocked 40 plus shots tonight. And that's whenever we've got that eye of the tiger about us, you know, we make it difficult for teams to kind of break us down. Whereas last year, as you well know, it was run and gun hockey. We conceded a lot, but we scored a lot. And this year we've been a lot better defensively overall, but maybe struggled to find the net. So it's, in some ways it's been a bit of role reversal, but definitely, I mean, I like our team. Whenever it's at full strength, it's got, as I say, it plays with that edge, and it's got some good skill in there as well, and make it difficult for opposition. And the opposition players know that they've been in a game once they've played the Manchester Storm. And I've heard a few coaches kind of say that the Storm are one of the teams that really scare them, because you just, you know, maybe that unpredictability to a certain extent. So, yes, I mean, we are in the middle of a dogfight for this final playoff position, but we're sitting in seventh position at the minute. And, you know, certainly from Pasha's perspective, my perspective, you know, playoffs is an absolute non-negotiable. We must be there.
The game is on Saturday, 7 p.m. at the SSE Arena. The Belfast Giants take on the Manchester Storm. Obviously, the last time the Storm were in the SSE, they walked out with the points. The Giants would be looking for a little bit of revenge. Get yourself down to the SSE, or catch it on Belfast Giants TV with Sizz and Johnny and whoever else. You getting home for the games, Coach?
Yep, I am. I'm flying in. Looking forward to getting back to the SSE, seeing a few familiar faces, and getting some quality time with my daughter for a couple of days. So absolutely can't wait to get back.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us, mate.
Cheers, lads.
Coach.
Okay, then. Any other business, gentlemen?
Yeah, I've got one. Boomerang Corner. Abandoning Boomerang Corner.
I saw that.
Making a boomerang on the east side. They went around for the start of the second period with there was a few seats available at the with the food bowl being in, there was a few seats available at the top end of the east end behind the well, it would have been the away team's net in the second period, and the guys heading down there was funny. It was they bring so much to the arena, and they seem to be really growing in numbers now as well, so they might not be Boomerang Corner much longer. They're probably going to have to find a bigger spot to put them all into. But yeah, absolutely outstanding.
It was brilliant. I did see. I wonder what was going on there. But yeah, fair play to them, Davey.
Just Dylan Cackey. You know, I like to keep him on top of what these wee lads are up to. And Dylan's obviously won a wee award there this week in disability sport. Really, really proud of him. And his mum's put a couple of videos up of him. Of him doing really well. Obviously, this transplant coming up and stuff, and he's getting himself in shape up there in TPF with Shays as well. And just wish you well, Dylan, in your upcoming, all the things you've got to do. It's good to see you working so hard there. You're an inspiration to us all.
Absolutely. I think some of his he's been doing some video blogs and stuff like that. They've been absolutely brilliant. But right, we got an email in from a long-time listener. Always good to get an email from Chris Lovell, and he just wants us to give a bit of a shout out for his charity boxing event that he's doing. He's lacing up the gloves himself, says, so maybe you could maybe give him a few tips. 24th of March, and he'd be selling tickets tenner, but we'll put up some more information of that on A View from the Bridge on the Twitter account, and maybe get Chris on before he starts to get in the ring. And take them on. Do you, any tips? throwing the fists?
I don't. Don't. Man, it's just getting too old. But just there was another one there. Davey's touched on Dylan. I seen the news coming out about wee Blake, and he's going to get his transplant. Mm-hmm. His heart, open heart surgery on the 4th of May, and just I think we'd all, you know, keep him in our thoughts, and hopefully man's going to pull through it okay. And you know, he's a wee warrior, and. He's got a bigger heart than anybody I know, so hopefully he'll be back on his feet again, back at the SSA Arena as quick as possible.
Oh, hear, hear. And I think that's it. Thanks to David Rutherford, Omar Pasha, Neil Russell, Mark Hitchcock, to you two gentlemen. I wish you well for this weekend. The Belfast Giants take on the Manchester Storm at the SSA Arena, 7 p.m. on Saturday night. Get yourself down there. or get watching on Belfast Giants TV. Who else is going to be on with you this week, Sis?
It really depends if Boxy hasn't made the lineup. He wants to come back on again, and Alex Foster wants to come on for a bit as well. So the I think the players are having a wee bit of competition. They all just, I mean, Kiefer's been on. We've had Matt Nickerson last year, Boxy, and there's a few others want to get on as well. So hopefully I don't see them in the commentating box, because if I do, then they're obviously not playing. I'd rather them play and pick up the win. So we'll wait and see what happens, but hopefully it'll be nobody, because, well, obviously Foster's out injured at the minute, so he will probably end up coming up for at least a period anyway.
And I'm just thinking, last time you had a guest commentator for a Manchester Storm game, he got very excited, David.
Oh, me? Yeah. Oh, that was such an exciting. It was a high energy moment. I think me, Sis, and Johnny were near blew the head off a few people on the webcast. The way the puck came back and Foster's just poaching around there to stick it in, and overtime wins always an exciting way to end the game and get us through the next round of the cup. It was a good old night, that Sis, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great crack. I really enjoyed it.
Well, let's hope for the same this weekend against the Manchester Storm. And wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey. And we'll catch you here next time on The View from the Bridge.